Welcome back in, everyone, to a wonderful new episode of Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper. Come along with us as we head uptown to the beautiful neighborhood of Harlem for our show today. And joining us to talk to us about this show, we have the playwright and co-director, Marcus Hatton, and one of the actors of the show, Gil Charleston. They're part of Tier 5 Theater Company's presentation of Julius, Harlem Caesar. It's playing March 7th through the 17th at El Barrio's Art Space, PS 109, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting tier5theatercompany.com. Longtime listeners of the show, you'll know that we recently had the executive director, James Cougar, on our show. He's the executive director of Tier 5 Theater Company. So we are so excited to be bringing you another production from this wonderful company. And all the way up here in our part of the island, up in Harlem. So this is a wonderful piece. So with that, let us welcome on our incredible guests. Marcus, Gil, welcome to Whisper in the Wings from Stage Whisper.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us.
I'm so happy that you're here. I want to know everything about this show. The name alone, I was like, hold on, this is great. So Marcus, I want to start with you. You're the playwright. Can you tell us a little bit about this show?
Yeah, so it is an adaptation of Shakespeare's Julius Caesar, retold or set in the during the Harlem Renaissance with a queer twist. I'm not a huge Shakespeare expert. However, James actually kind of encouraged me to try my hand at playwriting. So I kind of went through a list of Shakespeare writing. I can't say or specify, but something about Julius Caesar caught to me. And at the same time, I watched a video about how queer the Harlem Renaissance was, and somehow the two married each other and gave birth to the play.
That is wonderful. Oh my gosh, this sounds amazing. You've already piqued my interest in two ways, because I've never really thought about the Harlem Renaissance in relation to LGBTQI history. And the fact that you're intertwining that with Shakespeare, that's fabulous. So where did you come up with the idea to write this piece?
Yeah, so I wish I could remember the creator of the video I watched that talked about how queer the Harlem Renaissance was. But once I watched it, I was kind of like, oh, there are other people who also don't know how queer the Harlem Renaissance was. And it's now my mission to let everyone who will care enough to pay attention know that the Harlem Renaissance was at its heart very queer.
Wonderful. I love it. Now, Gil, I want to bring you in here, our wonderful actor from the show. How did you come upon this piece?
Well, I saw the casting for it, and I thought, this sounds really interesting. I'm as an actor, you know, we all do a Shakespeare play at one point in our life. And, you know, it's never been something that I was specifically drawn to, but something about the Harlem, you know, I lived in Harlem for about 15 years. So to me, I was fascinated with the idea of a story about Harlem. And I love the sort of 30s, that sort of era of just a simpler life in a sense. And so once I submitted for it and then got the audition, once I got the sides for the play, I thought I have to be a part of this. Like just the little one page scene I got, I was like, I need to be a part of this because this is kind of everything.
That is so wonderful. Loving this. Let me ask you both, I mean, at the time of this recording, we're about a week away from performances beginning. What has it been like developing the piece and getting it on its feet? And Gil, if I can start first with you on that.
It's been a really interesting and cool journey because we did a reading of the play in October and it was a stage reading. But what I loved about that, and we only had 3 days to put it up. So it was real guerrilla theater where we, you know, really put a skeleton together of just words on a piece of paper, and that the amount of energy and beauty that we were able to come up with in that short period of time, I knew that once we had a chance to let it breathe and expand, that it could only get bigger and better, which it has. Now, giving it sort of life, and we're not holding the script, we're sort of digging to these characters, has been an amazing experience, a really, really cool experience.
Fabulous. And what about you? What has it been like developing the work and hearing your words spoken and everything?
Yeah, it's been incredible for me, kind of to piggyback off of Gil. Reading had such a overwhelming reception that I wasn't expecting, that now, like, seeing this kind of blossom even further, I'm like, oh, everyone who loved the reading is gonna love what the actors have created through my work. So it's been great.
Super. Now, I'm very curious, with kind of this reinterpretation of Julius Caesar and the placement of it during the Harlem Renaissance, what is the message or thought that you hope audiences will take away from this piece? And Em, I'm going to come to you first, because not only are you the playwright, you're the co-director. So what is that?
I would love for people to walk away questioning their own tolerance and acceptance of people, and maybe reflecting on how they can work towards being more tolerant and acceptable, because I think that's at the core of the play, especially with a queer twist. And yeah, I feel like it's every rehearsal, I'm like, oh, this is so relatable, because everyone, no matter if you're queer, Black, whatever your creed is, everyone has like been in the situation where you thought you were doing something right, and then later realize, oh wait, I've totally screwed things up. Where do I go from here? And how do I deal with the guilt of realizing I've messed something super important up? I think is really at the heart of the story.
That is a stellar message to strive for. Gil, how about you? What message or thought are you hoping audiences will take away?
I play a not super supportive character. However, he represents another slice of life. You know, I want people to take away that your opinion is valid, whether it's right or wrong, that's up for people to decide themselves, but everyone has a point of view, and every point of view deserves to be heard, and you can disagree with it as much as you like, but everyone has the right to be heard. And sometimes it comes with language that's not necessarily super digestible. However, your right to say what you feel is just as equal as my right to say how I feel. And I hope the audience comes away realizing that, you know, even if you disagree with the characters, that's how they feel, and they have the right to do so. And, you know, maybe you agree with some of the things, you may not agree with all of it, but maybe you agree with some of it. So I like the fact that this sort of, this show definitely gives you slices of different perspectives while in the same environment, which I think is really beautiful.
Amen. Say that again for the people in the back. That is a wonderful idea. Well, my final this first part is, who do you hope access to Julius Harlem Caesar? Gil, I'd like to start first with you, if I may.
Everyone that lives in Harlem, first of all, I mean, they deserve to come see a show that represents the legacy, the history, the sort of pride that Harlem has always had. You know, Harlem, you know, to this day, in my opinion, you can go to some streets in Harlem and it feels almost like the 60s in the sense of community. Like, I, when I lived in Harlem, I knew the majority of the people on my block, you know, and that's very not New York in a sense, you know, but at the same time, it is New York. But what I loved about Harlem was the multi-generational aspect of it. You know, I knew grandmas, I knew their grandbabies, I knew, you know, the young couple that just moved in. I live there, you know, I was a single guy living there. So I want this show to give Harlem a little shine, and I would love, you know, especially gay youth, minority youth, to see themselves on stage, also something super powerful. You know, growing up, a lot of times you what someone like me would see maybe one person that looked like on stage. And this is an opportunity to intercast a people of all different shapes, sizes, colors, hues, nationalities, ethnicities. It's beautiful experience. And to be honest, that's sort of Harlem today. So we're kind of reflecting, even though we're telling the story, we're telling the story of Harlem today.
That is absolutely fantastic. I love all of that. And how about you? Who do you hope have access to your show?
Yeah, so I guess I have two answers. I would love for everyone in the world to have access to the show. But then my kind of less generalized answer is I would love for Black people of New York to have access to the show. I think to kind of piggyback off of Gil's response, I think we've sometimes only been shown one type of Black presence on stages. And something that has always stuck with me, I took an African studies class and the professor the first day was like, there isn't a Black community. There are Black communities and we are not a monolith. We do not all live the same life. And I think that's also displayed throughout the whole play is that these Black people are not a monolith. They all have different beliefs, interests, hobbies, etc. So it would be great for Black people of New York to have access to the show to be kind of nudged of like, yes, we are not a monolith. And there is no right or wrong way to be Black.
The second part of our interview is we love to let our listeners get to know our guests a little bit better, pull the curtain back, if you will. And I want to start with our regular first question, which is, what or who inspires you? What playwrights, composers, or shows have inspired you in the past, or are just some of your favorites? And Gil, if I could start this one with you.
Two things stick out immediately. And the first one is very random, but it's true. One thing that inspired me to go into performance. Okay, so when I was a kid, my mom used to love watching All My Children. Great show. Soap opera came on every day. We would talk about it. You know, it was a way for me, my mom and my sister to sort of talk about issues because, you know, it's about social stuff and things like that. But what inspired me was Susan Lucci. What inspired me about her was the fact that growing up, like every year, she was nominated for an award, right? She was nominated for an Emmy after Emmy, and she always lost. And what she inspired me to look at this sort of profession is you may not win, but that doesn't mean you give up. You continue doing what you do to the best of your ability. And even if you never get the recognition, you still show up. You don't let it beat you down. And so that always inspired me as a performer, that sort of stick-to-itness of it all. The other thing that inspired me was Denzel Washington. Seeing him as a kid, the first movie I think I saw him in was The Pelican Brief. And I'd never seen a man who sort of looked like me in like this. He was in a suit. He was a journalist. He was the lead. He was, you know, running and chasing and, you know, and being a hero. And I was like, I want to do that. I want to run around, be chased. Of course, I want to work with Julia Roberts, but more than anything, I want to be that guy, you know? So he was definitely an inspiration to me to get into the business. And I'm a ham, so I like being on stage. I like performing.
That is so wonderful. Way to end it with a great line. That's a great list, though. Marcus, how about you? What or who inspires you?
Yeah, so I've just recently gotten into playwriting in theater, so I wish I had more Black playwrights. But my background is more in fiction prose, so I have to say James Baldwin, of course, as a gay Black man. However, if I'm really like saying who has inspired me just to write is going to be Toni Morrison. I could probably have like 100 podcast episodes on why she is amazing. However, I could pinpoint for this. I've watched an interview. I apologize to the interviewer. I don't remember their name. But somehow they asked her about Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. And her only response was, invisible to who? And that was just had such a profound effect on me as a writer to kind of question, who am I writing this story for? Because if I'm writing it for Black people, a cis hetero Black man is not invisible to any Black people. They are, in fact, probably at the top of the social hierarchy in Black communities. And it just really made me feel like I had permission to not write for white people and that I can write for Black people. Yeah, I could go on and on.
Who doesn't not just love but respect the great Toni Morrison? That's all I'm going to say. I mean, sage words just fall out of her mouth. It's amazing. So wonderful inspiration there. I would love to know, I know you've both been very busy getting ready for performances and opening, but have either of you seen any great theater lately that you might be able to recommend to our listeners?
I did see Chicago a few months ago, and I have to say, I thought it was a really great production of the show. I did recently also see Jia Jia's Hair Braiding, which is no longer running, but just to give them props, it was an amazing show. The set was amazing. It felt so authentic to African braiding salons that I hope that someone else picks the show up because it needs to be shown.
And that ending, oh, yeah. Did not see that coming. I was gutted.
I did see something, and it also just closed. Sorry, listeners, but I saw Pearly Victorious, which was, it was a revelation. I knew one of the actresses in it. You know, we've worked together in the past, and I was blown away by her physicality. I was blown away by the cast in general. I was blown away by the subject matter that I believe this play was written in the 60s, maybe late 50s, early 60s. And the fact that it was still relevant today was, I mean, and what I loved is theater has an opportunity to make, we're all collectively breathing together. And so when you're watching theater, when everyone has sort of a visceral response to a piece and everyone, some people are uncomfortable, but they know it's a safe place to be uncomfortable. That show gave me such a feeling, you know, some things that I thought funny, I could see that other audience members were uncomfortable with, but they felt okay with being uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Because this was an experience that they've never experienced before. And so that show, from top to bottom, was something I'll never forget. And I was so grateful that I got a chance to see it.
Fabulous suggestion. Fabulous.
Yeah.
I want to now ask the two of you, what is your favorite part about working in the theater? And Em, I'm going to start with you on that.
Yeah, I guess as a writer and write to be a good writer, you have to be an avid reader. So I feel like I'm always in my head with a story and I have a certain image already set up as you do as the reader. So I feel like it's actually been incredible working on this for the moments where what I had envisioned in my head actually comes to fruition on stage. Yeah, just as a writer, it's been amazing seeing my words come to life. I can't underscore it.
That is a fantastic answer. I adore that. Gil, how about you? What's your favorite part about working in the theater?
Honestly, rehearsal, the sort of playing, you know, we're doing a play and we actually in a rehearsal situation get to play, and through the play you find moments of truth and you find moments of levity, you find moments of reality. And I love the process of engaging with other actors and, you know, being in the moment, as they say, you know, because theater, because it's a living, breathing entity, it can change moment to moment. It can change night to night. Every night's going to be different because there's a new audience there. And so the rehearsal process allows you to find all of those different variations, you know, because one day someone's going to drop a line. One day a prop is going to be not there and you're going to have to sort of move with it. And so I love the rehearsal process because you sort of work through those things and just get aware of them, but also just, you know, just finding new ways to, you know, when as an actor, sometimes we get really caught, we're stuck in how we've memorized it or how we've decided it's going to be. And you get into the rehearsal process and things just change because the other actor has their own thoughts, has their own process. And now you're sort of building, sort of making a dance with each other. Now we're learning the steps together. Now we're working in unison to create this sort of beautiful piece. And so not only in the reading, especially in this piece, the reading aspect that we did in October was amazing, but now doing it on our feet without the scripts has been, it's like made my brain like expand even more because now I'm hearing things that I didn't hear when we were holding scripts. Now I'm feeling things I wasn't feeling. And it just adds to the sort of tapestry of each character. Now we're learning more because we're not holding a script. And when you hold a script, you sort of are tied to it. But now, you know, the world is our oyster. And now this is a real world. And that's been amazing. And I like that with any theater experience, any acting experience, really. But this in particular has been a very organic, very moving, very beautiful experience with not only the actors, but the creative team as well. It's such a collaborative experience and it's a safe place. And that's something a lot of actors, you know, we don't always get a place where we feel safe, where we feel heard, where we feel listened to or, you know, and supported. And that Tier 5 definitely offers that in both of the productions I've been in. And I would assume that's part of their creed and what they lead by, because that's how it always comes across.
What a super answer. That's really great. And now we've arrived at my favorite question to ask guests. And that, of course, is what is your favorite theater memory?
Yeah, I have a few. I feel like my youngest theater memory is I'm originally from Buffalo, New York. So in one of the Buffalo theaters, I remember being like a third grader and seeing a rendition of The Little Prince. And for whatever reason, that has just always stuck with me as like such a magical moment as a kid of like feeling so giddy of like waiting to see the show of like, I couldn't even tell you like anything else, but like just the feeling of magic always has stuck with me from seeing that show.
That is a phenomenal memory. I love that. Who doesn't love The Little Prince? I'm just saying. Who doesn't love it?
I would say for me, for about 3 years of my life, I was involved in a play that put up every year. It was a one-man show about a man's journey through breast cancer. And it was surprisingly a comedy. It was called Die Laughing, and it was about a stand-up comic who is on the brink of success, but learns he has breast cancer, which, you know, sends him into a complete spiral. But what I loved about it was the way the playwright wrote it. It was a one-man show, so a lot of it was monologuing, but it was also pieced in was him actually doing stand-up sets in the actual audience, to the actual audience. And so that was probably the most challenging thing I've ever done as an actor, because it was me on stage an hour, 10 minutes. No, you know, I think we had an intermission, even though I don't think we did really, but that really taught me, you know, the magic of theater. It gave me a respect for stand-up comedians, which is like the hardest gig ever. And it really showed me that what I was doing was not in vain. You know what I mean? That I made the right choice with my life, that I was actually doing what I said to myself as a boy, I'm going to do. And so it was just one of the best experiences ever.
Another phenomenal memory. Wow, I love that. What a great play, too. My interest is totally piqued. I want more. Thank you both for those amazing memories. Those were so wonderful.
Thanks.
As we wrap things up here, I would love to know, do either of you have any other projects or productions coming down the pipeline that we might be able to plug for you?
So Tier 5 is actually this summer going to do a queer version of A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Dope. I have a movie that just started streaming on all platforms. It's a sweet story about two sisters. It's called The Sisters Karras, and we filmed it during the pandemic. And to me, I consider it not only a story about family, but a sort of a love letter to New York. It's, you know, shot in the city. It's very sweet. It's very simple. And it was another one of those experiences where, you know, performers, creative people came together and made a way out of no way. You know, this was during like the heart of the pandemic. There was no vaccine. We were shooting in small spaces. We were so careful and meticulous with how we did everything. And we, you know, we finished the movie. And then last year, I want to say we did sort of the film, you know, circuit where we went to a bunch of festivals, and the movie won a lot of really cool awards. And I'm just excited to be a part of it. And I'm really excited that it's now streaming on all platforms because, you know, as when you do film rather than theater, you can talk to people. Oh, I did this movie. I'm in a movie. And they can never see it. You know, it never comes out anywhere because it's a small independent movie. And so to finally have something that people can, you know, go on their television, see it, see me on their television, it's pretty exciting. And on top of it, it's a really great movie. So The Sisters Karras, streaming on all platforms.
Fantastic. Some great things happening for the both of you that we need to keep tabs on, which is a wonderful lead into my final question, which is if our listeners would like more information about Julius Harlem Caesar or about either of you, maybe they'd like to reach out to you. How can they do so?
Well, Instagram is probably the easiest way. And my tag is pretty simple. It's they call me _Gil. So they call me Gil.
Yeah, I would piggyback off of that and say Instagram is probably the fastest way to kind of catch up on all things Tier 5 and even myself. So I would say, yeah, at Tier 5 Theater Company, and then my writing kind of outside of Tier 5, my Instagram is at mhatton. So yeah, I would say Instagram is the best place.
Well, Marcus, Gil, thank you both so much for taking the time to speak with me today and sharing this incredible work. I truly cannot wait to see it. It sounds amazing. So thank you both so much for your time today.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
My guests today have been the playwright and co-director, Marcus Hatton, and the actor in the show, Gil Charleston, both who were part of Tier 5 Theater Company's presentation of Julius Harlem Caesar. It's happening March 7th through the 17th at El Barrio's Art Space, PS109, and you can get your tickets and more information by visiting tier5theatercompany.com. We also have some contact information for our guests so you can keep up with all their goings on, which we'll be posting in our social media posts as well as on our episode description. But right now, head over to tier5theatercompany.com, get your tickets for this amazing production of Julius Harlem Caesar playing March 7th through the 17th. So until next time, I'm Andrew Cortez reminding you to turn off your cell phones, unwrap your candies,
and keep talking about theater
in a stage whisper.
Thank you.
If you like what you hear, please leave a 5-star review, like, and subscribe.
You can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at Stage Whisper Pod.
And feel free to reach out to us with your comments and personal stories at stagewhisperpod@gmail.com.
And be sure to check out our website for all things Stage Whisper and theater. You'll be able to find merchandise, tours, tickets, and more. Simply visit stagewhisperpod.com. Our theme song is Maniac by Jazzar. Other music on this episode provided by Jazzar and Billy Murray. You can also become a patron of our show by logging on to patreon.com/stagewhisperpod. There you will find all the information about our backstage pass as well as our tip jar. Thank you so much for your generosity. We could not do this show without you.